Greetings, and welcome to the ancient pyramid known as the Mummy Cast. I'm cursed paleontologist Anthony Bowman. My pronouns are he, him, and I'm joined as always by...
the undead revenant, that is Eric Velasquez. My pronouns are also he, him.
Yeah, so, you know, we're back with another episode. We've gone through a lot of the classic mummy movies. We're kind of getting into the deeper cuts here, and I'm really excited to finally get to talk about Bubba Hotep.
Bubba Hotep! Hell yeah. We've been waiting for this one for a while, right?
Yeah. You know, I feel like it's for considering that, you know, this is made by Don Coscarelli and starring Bruce Campbell, it doesn't feel
and
like
Ozzie Davis.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem like it's gotten enough like recognition in the horror community. You know, you have the guy behind the Phantasm series, and Bruce Campbell, the guy behind the Evil Dead series.
Right.
And, you know, this is definitely like a lesser known thing in both of their catalogs.
I think we should also say it's kind of starring Reggie fucking Bannister as well. just because I love the Phantasm movies that much.
Yeah.
He deserved to be the star of those of those movies.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, so we ready to get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, well, by the way, we didn't mention that this was actually based on a short story or a novella by Joe R. Lansdale, who has done many of the, or just a few of the Batman the Animated Series cartoons.
Oh, episodes, interesting.
As well as a few Superman
animated
episodes. So
yeah, that name rang a bell, but I didn't know from where.
Yeah, he's also got a bunch of other books under his belt. Kind of, he's always known for Texas. Texas is always a setting of his. So
gotcha. Okay.
You know, go figure, right?
Yeah, that's definitely where we're going to spend all our time in this one as well.
Absolutely. So let's get this party started.
Yeah, so we start with just, you know, kind of like the definitions to kind of set up the whole vibe of the movie.
First we get Hotep, which nowadays, that means something slightly different in addition to what it meant.
True, yes. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely tied to the, you know, so like, yeah, it's a relative or a descendant of one of the 17 Egyptian dynasties. Slash a family surname of Egyptian pharaohs. And so, of course, you know, what you're referring to now, like a lot of like sort of like a certain sect of like black activists who consider they're like tying themselves to these dynasties and sort of like, you know, the cultural cachet that Egypt carries and sort of like the intellectual dynasty that, you know, all the great things Egypt accomplished, you know, and being a part of Africa, there's right. Definitely this sort of like, and I think there's definitely like sort of like disagreements in sort of like the black community about like where these people stand. You know, obviously not for us to dig into that too far, but yeah, you will definitely hear the term Hotep used, I think, mostly pejoratively. I don't know if like so we have that, and then contrasting that we have Bubba.
Which I think that just says it all, right? Bubba. We know where that's from.
Yeah. And from there we go into, you know, a pretty classic thing that we see a lot in these mummy movies, like old style newsreel footage of a mummy that has been recovered from a dig site and is now getting ready to be sort of put on a museum tour around America so that, you know, all us, you know, Americans who don't get around the world can experience the culture of Egypt.
I think so. And we're not British and just stole it immediately. Right. We had to steal from the British, probably.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think some of the footage may be like of King Tut, but it's like the actual footage they're using. But, you know, this mummy is not supposed to be King Tut. We'll find a little bit more about him as we go.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to go into some like 50s music that's kind of twangy. And it's going to tell us that this is taking place in Mud Creek, Texas, as I turn off my phone.
Yes, Mud Creek, Texas, present day.
The present day of 2001.
Right, yes. And the like, so we're outside of this sort of like rundown looking building, and then as like the camera cuts to inside, and it's just kind of like touring these hallways, and it's pretty clear that this is like a nursing home, you know. I think I think it specifically calls itself like an assisted living community,
convalescent home.
Okay, you know, I feel
that's
like
the nice way.
Yeah. There's a lot of these different terms, and I think probably within the world of these places, they mean slightly different things. But I think for the layman, nursing home, rest home, these all mean kind of the same thing.
Yeah.
In this case, it's, you know, it's a place to put our, you know, most, you know, elderly and sort of infirm people, where they can be taken care of and sort of put away from, like, regular society, you know, unfortunately, yeah. Or whatever.
I feel like that's the stigma that a lot of these places have. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's honestly like, hey, let's be real. It's kind of for poor families that can't take care of sick relatives.
Yeah, that can't afford to, like, pay for in-home nursing and all of that.
Right. Or maybe it is with rich people that just don't want to deal with the shitty ancestors they have, you know? Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah. And of course, I think nowadays these places are a little better, you know, they have more amenities and treat the residents a little bit more humanely and less like hospital patients. But, you know, things have changed a lot in the last, you know, 20 something years.
This is true.
Yeah. Which is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and talk about our Elvis or Elvis impersonator, Sebastian Aff.
Yeah. What, like, you know, the sort of elevator pitch for this movie being like, there's an old man who thinks he's Elvis but is not, living
and
in a nursing home.
An old man who thinks he's JFK and he's maybe not. Who knows?
Yeah. But I mean, I feel like the JFK one, like, is, he's definitely not JFK, but, like, as the story goes, like, I feel like there could be, arguments could be made that this is really Elvis.
I'm going to say I think the guy's JFK, man. Like, we see the scar on the back of his neck and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And
yeah.
We'll go with the story.
I do appreciate, like, that, you know, I think that's the thing that Don Coscarelli is good at, is, like, taking really, like,
preposterous situations.
Yeah, and making them sort of feel lived in a way where it's like, I can kind of believe this. Like, if
he humanizes them.
Yeah, I mean, the Phantasm series is, you know, it's one of the silliest, like, slasher premises, but it's not, like, in execution, it's not that silly. And,
right.
You know, he also did, like, the John Dies at the End movie, which is a really out there premise, and the movie, I think...
I love it, though.
Yeah, so yeah, it's really good. So he has a talent, and for taking these sort of, like, weird, outlandish things and giving a lot of humanity to them. Like, you know, again, this elevator pitch sounds like, it's a comedy, it's silly, you know, but there's some heavy stuff in this. Like,
yeah, there's definitely a lot of pathos going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dealing with your mortality, dealing with aging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even for the mummy, technically.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
All right, so let's start off with the dream about Elvis's infected dick.
Yeah. We get a lot of voiceover from Elvis, which is great because Bruce Campbell just has such, like, great comedic chops.
He sells it so much.
Yeah. He's talking about, like, yeah, that he's got, like, a growth that keeps returning on the tip of his dick. And in this dream, he, like, masturbates and causes it to pop. And he's like, but man, that's quite a dream because I haven't actually had a hard-on in a long time.
In years, as a matter of fact. It's been a couple of presidents since he's had one.
Right.
Golly. All right. So, but we also get kind of another situation that I think a lot of people, even if you're not, you know, an older person, can kind of understand. And that's, like, time going by quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he sees a bunch of the hospital workers and it looks like they're in fast forward motion, right?
Yeah.
But it's probably, they're just going about their day, obviously.
Yeah, it's just like, you see, like, a nurse, fast forward, she vanishes, and there's a janitor, he's moving quickly, then he's gone. Yeah, it's just, yeah, life's a blur, and the older you get, the more it's that way. Mm-hmm. And it also, there's a part of it, like, as this goes, we'll kind of see that Elvis has a bit of, like, a second sight, clairvoyance, sixth sense sort of thing, and mm-hmm. that seems like it's maybe tied into it, too, that he's just... seeing, like, the past and the future sort of blurring together.
It's quite possible.
Yeah, but I think that there's definitely the implication that, like, you know, he's seeing time just go by and he's just, you know, losing time so quickly.
Right.
from there we will see that like he's got a roommate and the roommate is coughing and like a
something fierce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's the kind of thing where it's like it's kind of annoying to him that he's having to listen to this loud coughing roommate, and it's like kind of gross, but it's also sad. Like this guy is like not doing well.
Well, he's all by himself other than his roommate.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably getting ready to pass on in a convalescent home.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, we throughout all of this, we're continuing to get, like, the voiceover from Elvis. He's, you know, wondering if, you know, Lisa Marie even knows he's still alive out there somewhere. Mm-hmm. And he can't believe that he went from being the king of rock and roll with, like, ladies throwing themselves at him to, like, now just being all alone in this kind of sad room.
Right, absolutely. And, of course, as he wonders about the growth on his pecker, his roommate does call out, reach out to each other. Mm-hmm. Elvis more in solidarity with the other guy than actual, like, emotional intimacy there. Mm-hmm. However, the roommate just rolls back and dies.
Yeah. And we cut right from that to him being loaded into a hearse.
One of the Undertaker's wonders about death, legacy, mm-hmm. and, you know, how you'll be remembered.
Yeah, these hearse guys will kind of become like a running gag. They're a little bit of comedic relief. I mean, there's a lot of comedy throughout this, but they seem like pretty much just there as like, you know, kind of like R2-D2, C-3PO characters. They're just kind of like commenting on things. One of them is Daniel Roebuck, who has been in a lot of Rob Zombie stuff, especially he was Grandpa in the Munsters not long ago.
One of these days is there really a reason for us to check that out?
I mean, there's a part where they're in that like restaurant that's sort of like Egyptian themed, but we could maybe get to it eventually. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's like the one guy who's like really examining mortality and is very serious, and the guy who's just like, we're just doing a job, shut up and move the right. You know, roll the body into the hearse so we can get back to base or whatever.
Right. The one guy who's pondering like mortality and the other guy who's just like, dude, I'm just trying to get paid.
Yeah. We cut from that back into like, it's like the evening, and there's a woman, a resident who's like shuffling down the hall.
Right, and she sees another woman in an iron lung, which is, you know, that's fun. but she also walks over and takes the glasses gently, lovingly off of her face, puts it on herself, and then walks off.
Yeah, just cold. Robs from this woman stuck in an iron lung.
Right.
Which is a common thing in these kind of facilities. Yeah. You know, there's just... I think
there's a stereotype about some older people being kleptomaniacs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think part of that, you know, there's probably just some people who don't care and some people who probably have enough dementia that just they're not sure what's theirs and what's not, and they just pick up things. And in fact, you know, she'll go down the hallway a little further and see like a little like a cookie tin with a bow taped to the top of it that's clearly another.
She'll just steal that
too. Yeah, picks that up, carries it back to her room.
Yeah, I feel like that's the reason why what's going to happen to her happens to her is because, like you were saying, if you have dementia, you know, this could be my thing, and you just take it with you. But I think with this lady, it's showing malicious intent.
Yeah, and, you know, as in every horror movie, you know, people have to be punished. So the next scene is her sitting in bed, enjoying
eating the chocolates.
Yeah, eating the snacks out of the tin. She hears a skittering sound. And then sees a very large beetle crawling around the room.
Wait, I thought that was just a really big cockroach.
Yeah, I think several people will refer to it as a cockroach, but of course, you know.
That's a scarab.
Yeah, we know this is a scarab. And she, like, ends up getting out of bed. She has a cane. She starts, like, trying to, like, crush the scarab with the cane. And then we get like a flash where she sees this like mysterious figure in the corner. He's kind of shadowed. We don't really get a good look at him right now. And then it just cuts away. So we know she's definitely gotten attacked by this mysterious guy.
Right. Well, apparently it was a fatal attack because Elvis then sees her being rolled down the hallway or pulled through the hall. No, she gets pulled down the hall. I'm sorry. And then she grabs onto the door frame and says, "Help me."
Yeah.
Which, that's got to be scary.
Yeah, and, like, this is all... Elvis is seeing this as, like, a vision. He's not, like, actually seeing her go by his room or anything. So this is where we really see that he's going to have these sort of premonitions that are going to kind of guide his movement throughout the movie.
Right.
He again sees more like fast forwarding of like nurses and janitors and stuff. So time is very fluid for him.
Then we get our friends, the Undertakers. One guy asks, the introspective one asks the other, hey, do you think we could? And the other guy cuts him off, is like, dude, don't get weepy on me. Don't get weepy and introspective. I'm not here for that. And he's like, no, we just need to use deodorant. She's really fresh.
Right, yeah. And then back in Elvis's room, he kind of like comes to and sees there's a very attractive young woman who is digging through his, you know, now dead roommate's desk.
Right.
And she just like picks up everything and just tosses it in the trash.
I understand one, where what she's coming from, because I've been through something like that where it's like, you know, I don't necessarily have time, but also this is not stuff that I necessarily want to remember. It could be, you know, traumatizing. I can't say that that's the case for her. But also, you know, you got to be quick about it. You got to get what you need. However, she also throws out just everything. She doesn't keep any one thing.
Yeah, it's like old photos, his purple heart. Like, these are things that should like,
should keep that.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, you know, this is definitely a part of, like, the just sort of banal aftershocks of death is that, like, you know, you want to keep things, keepsakes to remember these people you care about, but you can't keep everything. And it does feel bad and weird to just be like, this mattered to my grandma and now it's garbage, or you know, or now it's Goodwill and whatever.
Or also maybe you feel like you're stealing from your ancestor, whoever passed on as well.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
Another thing.
It's just, there's no like good feeling about it. It's no. Rough.
But she also throws out a tin of chocolates that looks eerily similar to the one that the old lady stole.
Yeah. And at this point, like, you know, Elvis sees her throwing all this away, and he's like, since you don't want any of that, can I have a few of the things? I think he mentions some photos, and I think the Purple Heart specifically.
And the tin of chocolates.
Yeah, she's like, sure, that's fine. So she bends down to dig them out of the trash can, which gives Elvis a
panty shot.
Yeah, he gets to see right up her skirt. And at first he's enjoying that, and then he's like, wait, she doesn't care that I'm seeing this. Like, she's not doing it on purpose, but she's not trying. Like,
she's not hiding it either.
Yeah, basically, he says this would be like you getting undressed in front of your cat. Like, yeah. I am completely like a non-human. I'm not sexualized in any way to her. This, you know, she doesn't need to feel modest around me, which is kind of depressing. But he does say, you know, I do feel like the slightest flutter in my pecker, and that's. You know, a rarity, so I'm going to enjoy that at least.
Yeah, I guess. Sure, why not?
But then
he starts getting a little preachy. He starts guilting her about how she only came to see her dad once whenever she brought him in, and now that basically she's taking him out effectively.
Yeah. Again, this is one of those things, like, you know, life kind of moves on. It's hard. Like, you know, you put somebody, you want them cared for, you put them in a place where they will be cared for,
yeah.
And we don't know their relationship. Maybe she just wanted to be rid of him because he was a bad dad. Or maybe just, you know, she's busy. Life got away. She meant to come see him and she didn't.
I mean, and she even says as much, not necessarily that he was a bad dad, but that, you know, she couldn't really afford to keep him near her. Mm-hmm. And in addition, he needed a lot more care than she was able to provide.
Yeah.
And she does add a little bit, though, that she may be a little bit too busy to have dealt with him. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think this movie is, like, I think it is really fair to everyone. Like, you know, you could go the route of, like, you know, she's awful for not doing this, or that he deserved it because he's awful, but it's kind of in the middle, you know? Like, maybe she could have made more time, but also maybe she didn't have it. And, you know, society, capitalism, it is hard to get that time off to go to visiting hours and, you know. So I think that it's fair to her that, like, you know, maybe she wasn't the best daughter, maybe he wasn't the best father, but they probably, you know, did what they could, and unfortunately, this is just the way things played out.
Right, exactly. Well, and this is also when the nurse comes in, and we learn that this is not Elvis, this is Sebastian Haff, as I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
H-A-F-F.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm not in hiding anymore. You don't have to call me that. I told you, call me Mr. Presley or Elvis. Mm-hmm. And the nurse kind of like, she's like, okay, fine, I'll call you Elvis. She's sort of mocking him. And
but you know, she explains he's an Elvis impersonator. That's who Sebastian Half was. And he's like, no, I was Elvis impersonating Sebastian Half, impersonating Elvis.
Yeah, and then we get like a flashback where we see this all play out, and it's really great. They use Bruce Campbell for both Elvis and Sebastian, and so the idea here is that at some point Elvis got kind of overwhelmed with the fame. He wanted to kind of like, you know, some time. So he found the best Elvis impersonator around, went and talked to him, and they did like the Prince and the Pauper thing. And Sebastian Half just like took over as Elvis, but then he died as Elvis, and so now,
because he loved drugs way more than Elvis did.
Right, so now Elvis is kind of stuck living the rest of his life as Sebastian Half.
Oh no. Well, it's not only that, it's also that he lost the papers that explained that he was Elvis instead of Sebastian Half in a barbecue accident.
He like drops like a whole can of lighter fluid next to a grill and like blows up like half a trailer park.
Yeah, it's that's pretty amazing. And he even comments, he's like, wow, that went up really fast.
And then I think that's that takes us back to the present, where like the nurse and the daughter are kind of like, they're teaming up to kind of poke fun at him, and both leave.
And he's like, well, they either think I'm useless and or oddly amusing. So once again, going back to the whole no threat, you know, an old doddering man just saying shit, basically.
And he kind of looks at his and the I think it's kind of pointed that the roommate never has a name. I think in the credits he's just called roommate. Like the people are just kind of erased as they get older. But he looks at his purple heart and he's just like, you know, in the end, none of this matters. Like, it's all going to be trash. Like, I saved this for now, but then when I go in how many ever years, there's nobody that's going to pick up after me, and it's going to end up in the trash anyway.
Right. He just saved it for a little while, right?
Yeah. And we cut from that to Elvis talking to his only friend who actually believes him. But he's like,
John F. Kennedy.
Yeah. So and he's like, you know, he's a bit of a crackpot. It's kind of a funny thing where like, it seems like
The Elvis impersonator who thinks he's actually Elvis is calling the guy, the black guy who thinks he's John F. Kennedy, crazy, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, he has a sound. He has an amazing story. So apparently, whenever he was shot, they took out some of his brain, placed it in a jar in Washington, D.C., dyed him black, and filled the rest of his head with sand.
Yeah. And
a bag of sand.
And then Elvis is like, but you're black. JFK wasn't black. And he's like, that's how good the conspiracy is. They dyed my skin so that no one would be able to find me anymore. And yeah, Elvis is kind of like, oh, okay, sure.
Yeah.
And then we cut to another flashback of our Elvis here pretending to be Sebastian Half.
Pretending to be Elvis.
Yeah. So he's like performing as an Elvis impersonator, doing like the classic late period Elvis like karate kicks and stuff, and he has like his hip goes out and he falls off the stage, and then this is of course he's injured, he goes into a coma, and this is where he ends up waking up in this you know,
convalescent home.
And then I think we cut to back to the present. Elvis is like in bed and he gets up because he has to go to the bathroom, and he's like,
right, I do like how he checks the bedpans, like, did I use it? Nope. Okay. Screw that.
Yeah. So he's got a walker. He starts like shuffling down the hallway.
He turns on the heater as he goes, though.
Mm-hmm.
That is an important plot point later.
Yeah. And he sees the cookie tin and it's laying on the floor upside down. Mm-hmm. So he picks it up, and underneath it is another of our scarabs.
Yeah. And it springs to life, just springs at him. He just falls over and barely dodges it. And we get a little bit of an Evil Dead scene with the scarab where it's climbing up the walls, like his hand.
Yeah.
In Evil Dead.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, this is why you get Bruce Campbell. Like, it's, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very animated kind of slapstick fight. You know, he's probably just, like, playing with a plastic bug for a good portion of it, just, like, making it do stuff, you know. Like
having a great time.
Yeah, yeah. And eventually, like, he ends up catching it underneath a bedpan, but then he realizes, like, he doesn't know what to do, so he...
Right. Well, he also thinks, oh, wait, maybe I missed it. And this is another, like, Evil Dead bit where the scarab is hiding in the bedpan.
Yeah. He, like, picks it up and he looks inside, and, of course, then it, you know, like, launches out and attacks him again. And they end up rolling around on the floor. At some point, he manages to get, like, a fork that's, like, fallen off of his dinner tray. He stabs it with a fork, and then, like you said, he had turned on the heater that it's laying on the floor now as well. It's like a heat lamp kind of thing.
And he cooks the scarab. He
cooks it. Yep. Burns it up.
I think he almost electrocutes himself as well, but that seems a little silly, but...
Yeah.
The man said about a guy shoving a scarab into a heater.
And so then we see him, like, roaming around the halls. You know, this is, like, late night, and he's just, like, calling for help, and no one's around. And, of course, that's the whole point of these homes, is even in after hours, there should be...
Somebody.
Yeah, some kind of nursing staff, after hours people, but he can't find anyone. And he's like, you know, there's... I don't know what's going on, but there's these giant bugs. You all need to take care of this.
Well, one thing we didn't note was that the inside of this convalescent home is basically built like a maze. Like, mm-hmm. as opposed to modern nursing homes that I've been seen, they look more like you have the central nurse desk mm-hmm. where everyone can kind of see everybody else. And this, you know, once again, this is 20 years removed, but mm-hmm. I still feel like even at the time they had something slightly better than, hey, screaming down the hall, maybe somebody will come get you, or maybe they won't.
Yeah, there's a little bit here that kind of reminds me of, like, The Shining, because it's just, like, all the halls look the same. It probably is literally one hall that they just slightly redress over and over again to make it be, you know, a different part of the hospital. But it would be so easy to get lost in this because it all just looks the same.
Right. So he goes to see his friend Jack. Mm-hmm. And as he enters his room, he sees pictures of Jackie Kennedy, Jack Ruby, Lee Harvey Oswald, a few other people, a few other notables.
Mm-hmm. And, like, little dioramas of, like, Dealey Plaza and a little, like, you know, toy car of the limo.
Depositor.
Yeah. Yeah. So clearly, you know, Jack is, like, really trying to figure out what exactly happened to him. And, you know, he's, like, working it all out. He's a JFK conspiracy nut, basically, for his own conspiracy.
Yeah. Well, and we also see that Jack has fallen over. Like, he's turned over. So, obviously, Elvis is like, oh, no, something's happened to Jack here. Mm-hmm. He turns him over, or tries to turn him over. He checks the back of his neck. That's where he sees the scar. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's like, maybe he is the real John F. Kennedy.
Yeah. And he's like, Jack, what are you doing? You're on the floor. And he's like, this big giant bug attacked me. And, you know, it was so ugly. Like, at first I thought it was maybe LBJ had sent it to finish me off. But it's so ugly. I think it might have been LBJ. He might have been in disguise as a giant bug.
Right.
and Elvis is like, yeah, could be.
Well, he says, well, Lyndon Johnson's dead, man. He's like, that. You don't think a little thing like that will stop him, do you?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, this is the middle of the night, and I think then we cut from them talking to, like, the next day. Finally, there's doctors around paying attention, and they're trying to explain all this, but, you know, when you've got the crank who thinks he's Elvis and the crank who thinks he's JFK being like, we got attacked by giant bugs, the doctors are all right. Like, yeah, sure, we'll definitely look into this.
And this is where Reggie Bannister comes in.
Yeah.
As, like, the intended.
Yeah, it's nice to get a little cameo from him. Mm-hmm. And then I think we just cut to, like, a little later. Elvis is back in his room, and our, like, one main nurse, that's pretty much the only nurse we really see, she's coming in to visit him, and she's
they
like...
They have to do that little thing again.
Yep, it's time for that. And so she puts on gloves, and she's got some sort of ointment cream or whatever, and she's applying this to his infected dick.
Yeah, I appreciate how everyone involved is super uncomfortable with this whole situation.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's like, you know, this is the indignity of it all. You know, I used to be Elvis. Women you know, we're lining up to try to touch my dick, and now like this woman has to do it for, you know, because she's a nurse, and right. she's not having a good time. Yeah, and I'm not having a good time. It's just, it's all so sad.
But he also relives the events of last night and the excitement that he experienced.
Mm-hmm. Of like fighting the beetle.
Yeah, because of that adrenaline, he regains his erection. And, you know, she does say, oh, Mr. Half, you're, you know, maybe you need to take a cold shower. But also, she doesn't seem too angry about that, right? I feel like anger would be, indignant anger would be the most appropriate response other than, hey, now.
Yeah, I feel, you know, like, I guess, you know, when you're a nurse, you're used to a lot of uncomfortable situations like this. And yeah, I think she's kind of, you know, she's sort of playful with him. Like, they have banter, you know, they joke around with each other a lot. And I think she's like, you know, you're an old man. It's impressive. Good job for you, you know. But right. like, you know, but she is like, you know, dirty rat or something. Like, she's kind of playfully chastising him. It's actually kind of a sweet moment. Like, you know, she cares for him in a way. She's obviously not, like, sexually interested in him, but no. she's not, like, disgusted by the fact that this has happened.
Right. So let's cut to mealtime at the convalescent home, where we have a gentleman dressed as a Lone Ranger figure, just shooting his cap guns into nothing.
Yeah. And Elvis refers to him as Kemosabe.
Right, that's kind of a thing. But he's the guy is also talking about an ambush under the bridge. He's just mentioning that kind of offhandedly.
Yeah, and then I think it's like after dinner, a little later, Elvis is back in bed. It's night. He has like a vision of like a woman silhouetted in the doorway. It seems like a sexy thing is about to happen, but suddenly he's just shaken awake, and it's, you know, Jack there with him, and he's like, there's more of the bugs are loose in the facility. Like,
right, I think Lyndon Johnson just walked past the door.
Yeah, and he's like, so, you know, the bugs, he sent them. It's, you know, it's some kind of assassin group that's after us, and I need your help. And at first, Elvis is kind of like, I don't know if I really want to get involved. But eventually, he's like, all right, yeah, let's do it. And Jack's like, well, but first, I need some assurances to know that I can trust you. So promise me you had nothing to do with Dallas. You didn't know Lee Harvey Oswald or Jack Ruby. And Elvis is like, yeah, of course, I had nothing to do with any of that. And they, you know, they decide to set to work. They go out in the hallways and start investigating. They're this, like, sort of like a buddy cop duo sort of thing.
Right. Well, Jack actually found some hieroglyphics in the bathroom stall that he wants to take Elvis to.
Yeah, so it's classic Egyptian hieroglyphics, but they've, like, written on the bathroom stall the way that someone would write, like, obscene stuff or whatever.
Right. And we learned that Jack apparently can read ancient Egyptian hieroglyphs.
He says he wrote it down and, like, took it to his room. I don't know where you would look up the translation back in 2001. I don't think the internet would have had as much stuff available at that point. But
maybe he had the right dictionary or Encyclopedia Britannica or something like that. But apparently it's something about Cleopatra doing the nasty.
Yeah, I think it says, like, Pharaoh gobbles donkey dicks and Cleopatra does the nasty or something. So it's normal bathroom wall stuff, but just written in hieroglyphics.
Slightly classier because they're hieroglyphics.
Yeah. And he also, so Jack says he's, you know, he went to the bathroom and he just happened upon this. But while he was in there, one of the scarabs jumped up and attacked him, and it tried to suck his soul out of his asshole.
That's all. Yeah, because, see, as everyone knows, like, your soul can leave literally any orifice of your body, so the asshole was clearly the most opportune spot for the scarab to suck it from.
Yeah. And he's like, I'll show you. There's a soul sucker. It's a whole thing. I'll show it to you later.
Yeah.
But we cut from them to the nurse who is outside having a smoke break. And she, like, looks off in the distance. There's, like, a gardener shed, greenhouse kind of building. And there's, like, weird flashes of light inside there. And she's kind of looking like, there shouldn't be anything going on in there.
Right. It's a scary movie, though, so she's got to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
Or try to.
But before she can, she gets a jump scare, and it's a doctor who has snuck up behind her. Yeah.
Reggie Bannister's back.
Yeah, and he's like, hey, we need you back inside. There's a patient that, doesn't he say he needs an enema or something like that?
Mrs. Finkelstein needs an enema.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, okay, fine, let me finish my smoke real quick and I'll be right in. And so while she's finishing those last couple drags, we get a classic sort of Evil Dead, you know, POV camera shot that's like tinted blue. This watching seems to her. Be like a scarab like crawling towards her. Mm-hmm. But, you know, before it gets to her, she turns around and goes inside.
Right. And then the shed door swings open. We see the mummy's boots as he's stepping out. But we also see two bodies. Mm-hmm. So he's gotten two people tonight.
Yep. And yeah, so he's got like classic, like just, you know, Texas cowboy boots on. Right. And then we cut back to inside where JFK is flipping through this book called The Everyday Man or Woman's Book of the Soul. He flips to this chapter about the soul sucker and sets it down in front of Elvis, and Elvis is looking at it, and basically, you know, it needs to feed on souls to survive, and the healthier and more robust, and I think large is the term they use, like the bigger the soul, the more nourishing it'll be. But because
they could use small souls,
yeah, to just kind of like limp along. So that's what's going on here, is a small soul is an old, shriveled up, nearly dead soul. So the soul sucker is having to eat a lot more. And that's why people keep dying so quickly here at the nursing home.
Right. But anyway, Elvis, do you want a ding dong? A chocolate ding dong? But not Jack's chocolate ding dong.
Yeah, he's like, not a not my ding dong, like, you know, a chocolate one. Oh, I guess mine's chocolate now too, now that I've been dyed. I've got a big stash of snacks, and he pulls it out, and I think Elvis ends up getting a like some kind of candy bar instead of a ding dong.
Baby Ruth, yeah.
Okay, and you know they're like, well, we gotta do something. Like the soul sucker has sort of like an endless buffet here of like weak victims that can't fight back, and they're gonna keep shuffling new people in to replace the ones that die off. So this is important that we get on it. And they're like, but if he's a soul, why was he in the bathroom in the first place? Suckers shit? And Jack's
soul residue.
Yeah. And they're like, man, what an indignity to, like, you know, the last thing that your soul does is get shit out into a nursing home toilet.
Right. You don't even get to go to heaven or hell or anywhere in between. You just get digested, effectively.
Yeah. And Elvis is like, we got to do something. So he goes outside, and Jack's kind of like, nice knowing you, Elvis. Like, he assumes he's going to die.
Well, in between there, though, we also cut to the gentleman known as Kimo Sabe, who gets up, or like wakes up, sees the mummy eating another old person, pulls out his cap guns, and just fires away at him.
Right.
That's when Elvis comes out, and Jack's like, you know, you go do your own thing, man.
Right. So then Elvis does see the mummy walking down the hall, and we now get a little better look at him. He does have the Texas cowboy boots and also a cowboy hat.
Mm-hmm. And he looks like an actual mummy, like ones you would see in a museum.
Yeah, not our like classic heavily bandaged toilet paper mummies. This is a more decayed, shriveled up. Yeah, exactly. Then he kind of like has another vision where he sees the past. It's a lot of quick cuts. It's kind of hard to exactly interpret it, but it seems that the soul sucker was at one time a person who was mummified, and his sarcophagus then was later recovered and put on a bus and was being transported, and then the bus crashed.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But we also get to see Elvis's friend walk out with his cap guns still firing at the mummy, and just keep saying, asshole, asshole, asshole. And then after a moment, though, he clutches his chest, presumably having a heart attack, falls down, and passes away.
Yeah, and so then it's like a little bit later, nurses are rushing out. They're trying to save the Lone Ranger, and Elvis and JFK are just kind of standing there in a daze, sort of looking on.
This is when Reggie Bannister. Anyway, Reggie comes up and berates them for basically being around the same place, wondering, why do you guys keep showing up when everybody's dying? Mm-hmm. And we also get Elvis saying he's walking around like some kind of Bubba Hotep. Oh, no, name drop.
Yeah. And Elvis is also, you know, he's glad that the Lone Ranger died of a heart attack, so he got to keep his soul. His soul went to wherever it's supposed to go instead of getting sucked up by the mummy.
And shit out.
Yeah. So then we get, like, the next day, we again get our hearse guys, and they're carrying out the ranger to the hearse.
But we get more of a comedy bit here.
Yeah, they actually drop his body, and it's, you know, it's like a Three Stooges bit kind of thing, as they're trying to, like, pick him back up and get him into the hearse and everything. We see a little later, Elvis is sitting outside. He, like, picks some flowers and is, like, smelling them. You know, I feel like this is, he's literally taking time to smell the roses, you know, as... You know, as we keep saying, he's getting older. He's seeing time pass rapidly and in strange ways. And now he's seeing a lot of people that he knows and cares about, you know, die even sooner than they should have otherwise. Right. So, you know, I think this is definitely a metaphorical, you know, taking a moment to appreciate the life that he does still have.
Right. But of course, the nurse comes out and wonders, hey, why are you out here? You need to come inside before you get hurt.
Mm-hmm. And it's about time for your nap anyway. Right. And I think Elvis takes that kind of, you know, he takes that hard. Like, he's trying to feel like a real person and not a patient, you know?
Right.
So
and
he's like...
He even scolds her. He's like, stop treating me like a damn baby.
Yeah. I think he says, fuck off. And she's like, but we have to do that thing, you know? And he's like...
I'll do it myself.
Yeah, I can lube up my own crankshaft.
Yep.
She's kind of shocked by that and does turn around and go back inside and leaves him. And he kind of goes for a walk, gets to sort of like a hill, and he's trying to like go down this kind of steep hill in his walker.
But he is an older person with a walker.
Yeah. And this is another comedy bit that's just great with Bruce Campbell, because like it seems like he's going to fall and roll down the hill, but he manages not to. He gets all the way to the bottom without taking a tumble. And when he at the bottom, there's a river, and he like makes the connection that this is where the bus went in.
And even makes a further connection when he sees the bus plate in the river, right by the riverbank.
Yeah. And he's like, I wonder how this all happened. And we get like some more kind of flashes that are quick cuts that are hard to kind of interpret. But we see the crash sort of take place, the bus going off a bridge. And then the next thing we see, Elvis just kind of coming back to his room, and he's
disheveled,
exhausted
and dirty.
Yeah, you know, we don't see him go back up the hill, but that had to be equally difficult.
More than likely on his hands and knees crawling up the hill. But he decides this is the time I need to check my pecker. Mm-hmm. So he does so.
And, you know, he's like, I bet this is actually cancer and the doctors are hiding it from me. I probably don't have much time left.
Right.
He starts, you know, putting the cream on and just like, lays back in bed to watch some TV and stumbles upon a movie marathon of old Elvis movies. And
where he kind of realizes that, you know, he wonders if he ever really had any pride to begin with because of all how goofy these movies were. Any limits? Maybe I should have fired Colonel Tom is his name?
Colonel Parker, Parker. Because I feel like he puts them on and he's like, oh, I'm going to relive my glory days. And then he's like, oh, I've made bad decisions my whole life. You know, I trusted him. I didn't treat Priscilla very well. I didn't treat my own daughter, Lisa Marie, very well.
They would think.
Yeah. Where would they think of me now? And where would I be with them if I had been a better version of myself?
That's when Jack comes in revealing that the lady known as his niece, I feel like regardless, that's his niece, but sure, why not? Took him downtown to do some more research. So he went to the Free Public Library.
Yeah, and he found out that several years ago, there was a lesser-known mummy that was on a tour of the U.S., you know, going to different museums, and it was in Texas. It went missing one day. And
stolen by two guys in a silver bus.
Yeah, police suspected that, you know, that they... We're going to try to ransom it, but then they just never did. It seems
a hell of a storm came up.
Yeah. They kind of like confer with like what Elvis now knows and what, you know, Jack was able to research. And it seems like there was a tornado that caused the bus to crash.
If you've listened to this podcast, you know that mummies equal storms of some variety. They always create them.
Yeah. It definitely feels like this is a case where the mummy orchestrated the storm as a way to escape. And now that it's on the loose, it's feeding on souls, it's getting more powerful. You know, again, this we see this often where the mummy, you know, keeps absorbing life force until it turns into, you know, just a reincarnated Egyptian person, no longer mummified. So it's that's definitely the path we're headed towards here.
Exactly. And at this point, I think basically the plan is to go to sleep now, and then we'll fight the mummy later tonight. Basically, it's the middle of the day. They said they figure it's a nocturnal creature, so they need to be wide awake when it starts doing its thing.
Yeah, and they can't trust that anybody else is going to help here. No one's going to believe them, so it has to be them.
Right, and I love how Jack just goes down the hall, and Elvis just, he's like, I'm going to be a hero. And he gives Jack a call and is like, all right, I forget exactly what the line he uses, but it's basically, let's do this, Jack.
He says, ask not what your rest home can do for you, ask what you could do for your rest home. And Jack's like, hey, that's my line.
Yeah, stop saying steal my good stuff.
Yeah, and he's like, all right, well, then let me use one of mine. Let's take care of business.
Yeah. By the way, I do love how Jack has a red phone.
You know? Yes, it's so good. Yeah. It's a really subtle little touch there, but yeah, it's really nice. And so then we see Elvis and Jack gearing up for battle. They're, you know, getting supplies, which include
we've got
like
two bottles of rubbing alcohol, a sprayer, a lighter, our uniforms, which is, you know, Elvis's jumpsuit and a really nice suit for Jack. Some scissors and an oiled up wheelchair.
And then we get like the classic like hero moment you get in like every action movie of the heroes moving in slow motion towards their goal. But here it's, you know, Jack in his wheelchair and Elvis in his like, you know, white walker. Vegas jumpsuit with a walker moving in slow motion. And it's like they were already moving in slow motion, but we're still going to kick on the like movie slow-mo on top of that. When they like get to where they're going, like there's like a moment where they regroup and they're like, they talk about that, you know, they've had, they both had to leave their loved ones behind when they needed them most, because of their strange circumstances, you know, Jack's death and Elvis's, you know, sort of disappearance or whatever. And Elvis has an idea. He stole like one of those weed killer spray bottle things from the gardener, and he's filling it with gas. He's going to make it into like a flamethrower.
Well, alcohol. Alcohol.
Yeah. I guess gas would be a little bit more dangerous there. They're getting ready to split up to kind of like execute this plan that we, you know, we haven't really heard what the plan is.
Jack tells him to watch his ass.
Yeah. And then Elvis is like, before you go, I've got one question. What's the deal with Marilyn? And Jack's like, what do you mean? Classified. And he's like, yeah, Marilyn Monroe, how was she? And he's like, yeah, he's at first he seems like he's like offended, and he's like, how dare you, kind of, he's like, that's classified information. And then he's like, but between you and me, wow.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So at that point they do split up. It seems kind of like Jack's the bait. He kind of rolls into the clearing in his wheelchair while Elvis is kind of like hidden behind some trees.
We get to see the mummy do its slow walk.
Mm-hmm. It comes out of the shadows, and it kind of has like a thing where it like it flickers and like disappears and then reappears, having moved like closer, which is really ominous. Like it looks really cool. Yeah. And then, you know, while all that's going on, Elvis is, you know, preparing the flamethrower, and he looks over and sees Jack has fallen asleep in his wheelchair. Oh no, this is not according to plan.
Wake up, Jack.
Yeah. You know, Elvis is kind of hiding behind the tree and sort of trying to peek around the tree, but he doesn't see that the mummy is on the other side of the tree also peeking around. It's almost like a Scooby-Doo bit.
Yeah, it's a surprise attack, right? An ambush. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they end up fighting. Elvis is doing, like, his karate moves again.
Throws out his hip a little bit.
Yeah, and the mummy seems kind of confused. Like, what is this? This is not what I was expecting out of this encounter. And in the meantime, their fight has woken up Jack, who is now...
He's going to try and ambush the mummy.
Mm-hmm. But the mummy, like, sees him and then vanishes behind a tree and then appears, like, right next to Jack and, like, knocks him out of the wheelchair.
Right.
So then, like, the mummy is on top of Jack, like, trying to suck out his soul.
The wheelchair is still going, though.
Yeah,
it's just a runaway. It goes right towards
Elvis. Yeah. So Elvis jumps into the wheelchair, does like a U-turn.
I wouldn't say jumps. It more like turns and falls into the wheelchair.
Yeah. It's all like very much like parodies of an action movie. Mm-hmm. But, this is like, Fast and the Furious, Dom's jumping into the runaway car. But instead, it's an old man falling into a wheelchair. Right. He does a U-turn, starts flying back in, wheelchair speed, which is not that fast.
No.
And he gets to the mummy, and it's, like, leaning over Jack's face.
Kind of French kissing him, almost.
Mm-hmm. But Jack sprays him down with the alcohol and pulls out a Zippo and throws it at him.
I do like how the mummy speaks Egyptian at Jack and...
Yeah, we get, like, Elvis. Him speaking, like, like a nonsense language we don't understand. And then there are hieroglyphic subtitles underneath him and then English subtitles. Yeah. And he says something like, I'll get you by Ra's hand or something like that. I can't remember exactly.
By Ra's red eye.
Yeah, okay. Then he gets set ablaze and he kind of starts stumbling away on fire. Elvis, drops down next to Jack to see if he's okay. And Jack's like, I'm dying. This is it for me. I'm finally going to go. But here, take this. And he hands Elvis like a folded up little note.
Right. This is the incantation that can get rid of the mummy.
Mm-hmm. And then he fades away. He's dead. And
I Elvis, guess he's half going to half be shit later on.
Right. And then, Elvis is like, I promise to take care of business. And he salutes the dead president and stands up, starts approaching the mummy, reading the incantation, which is like just the silliest.
It's a really bad rhyme.
Yeah, it's like a poem that like barely rhymes. It seems like something a kid would write to be serious, but it's just goofy.
He's like, well, this is shit. I'm going to kick your ass.
Yeah, this is definitely not going to work. And then he gets close to the mummy, who has, like, collapsed, after burning up or whatever. But then he, sits up, Michael Myers style. He's not that burnt. He's okay.
Right. But, of course, this is a trash-talking mummy. So he also, in the hieroglyphics, tells Elvis to eat the dick of Anubis.
Yeah. And he calls him an asswipe. And Elvis is still in the wheelchair. He crashes into the mummy, and they go rolling down that hill that they were on earlier.
Right. Now, one thing that you'll notice is during the rolling down with the mummy and Elvis, you hear a slash, like maybe something ripped. And that is unfortunately going to be very important here in a moment.
Yeah. When they kind of like stop at the bottom, Elvis looks at he's got a wound in his side that is like, bleeding and open.
Mummy grabs a club and just starts beating him.
Yeah. For a second, when like I saw like specifically where the cut is, I was like, are they going to get like biblical with us on here? The classic like Jesus's side at the crucifixion. They never really go too far into that, but... I feel like with Elvis being the king, it's easy to kind of make that parallel.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Like you said, the mummy attacks him. They just kind of tussle a little bit. It looks like the mummy's got him, but then he still has
the sprayer.
He sprays the mummy down again with more gas. And
lights him up.
Yeah, and it's like Elvis is like kind of like blacking out. He's like, if I go unconscious, it's over. Like, my soul's gone.
I'm gonna end up shit in the toilet.
Yeah, and then he'll just run through everyone else at the home. Like, I'm this place's last hope. He manages to get the lighter going. sets the mummy on fire again. And the mummy, this time, I guess he's more soaked or whatever, but he's this time it's really hurting him. He's screaming in agony.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He even, and like, we know the mummy's dead because it's fallen into pieces in the river.
Yeah. It collapses in the river, and it's like he's so soaked in alcohol that he's still on fire, even though he's like in the water.
Right.
And Elvis is just laying there in pain on the side of the river, kind of bleeding out. And he's like, well, you know, it looks like this is the end for me, but at least I still have my soul.
So, yeah. And I've saved the others of, you know, the souls of everyone else at that nursing home.
Yeah. And then, you know,
this is goofy. This is actually goofy. I guess the universe, or like, who is it writing in the sky?
Yeah, I don't know if it's supposed to be the universe telling him everything's okay, or if it's like just, you know, one of those things where as he's dying, his own subconscious is reassuring him or whatever. But yeah, he looks up at the stars, and the stars like rearrange and spell out hieroglyphics in like a constellation form, and then we get subtitles. Well. Yeah, all is well.
You know, and honestly, it went out this. We close on the only way this could go out, and that's Elvis saying thank you. Thank you very much.
And then he just kind of fades away, and then we go to credits. And I was like, this movie came out in 2001. There's probably nothing at the end of the credits, but I went ahead and stuck around. Did you stay to the end of the credits?
I you know what? This is the third or fourth time, and I haven't. No, I have not.
So at the very, very end of the credits, we get like a James Bond kind of deal where it says, Elvis will return in Bubba Nosferatu, Curse of the She-Vampire.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
And then like in tiny letters underneath it, it says starring Sebastian Haff. So kind of continuing to blur the line with like, is Elvis dead or is Elvis alive? Which one's really Elvis? Right. Which one's Sebastian?
We're getting almost a Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy situation, right?
Yeah. It's just, you know, like, this movie is just, it's so impressive that, like, it takes this, and I've never read the short story. I don't know if you had time to read it.
I have not. I'm going to remedy that here in a minute, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm definitely curious about it because, you know, like we said at the beginning, like, it's a very silly premise that could have been executed in a very silly comical way. It probably would have been a lot of fun. It would have been, like, a Sam Raimi type of movie, you know? Mm-hmm. But Don Coscarelli, he does it differently, you know, like he's giving us a lot of emotional stuff to deal with, you know, like, you know, thinking about mortality, thinking about, you know, aging and what that means and how you matter less to society and the things that matter to you matter less. And, you know, like, you know, I know we've both lost, you know, grandparents, people that we care about. Recently, my mom is moving and having to like downsize and is throwing all this stuff away. And I'm just seeing, you know, all these things that mattered to her that she's just got to get rid of. And she's trying to give it to me and I can't take it. I don't have room. So just seeing all of these, you know, it just really kind of makes you think about like the impermanence of everything. And like this movie's not afraid to really stare at that and let you kind of reckon with that, you know, and then we'll have you'll have a dick joke right afterwards. So it's not gonna beat you up with emotion, but it's gonna look there. Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like that's kind of a hallmark of Joe R. Lansdale, though, is aside from his animated series writing, is just that, you know, he examines mortality under these different situations, as wild as they may be.
Yeah, I definitely want to read this story because I wonder, I mean, I know, you know, I wonder how much came from the story and how much Coscarelli kind of like, you know, fine-tuned as he went. But I mean, from what you're saying, it sounds like it may have just been like a match made in heaven and they just really clicked. Because there's different ways that this kind of basic premise could have been approached that could have also been good. But I think the way that this movie sneaks up on you is really its strength. It's, you know, you're watching a movie called Bubba Hotep with a silly old Elvis, and then you're like, oh, I'm feeling stuff. I wasn't expecting that, but, you know, it's nice. That's why we, you know, analyze these movies and talk about them week after week is like there is something here. And I think that's definitely a big part of like Mummy stories is thoughts about like, mortality and trying to resist that the impermanence of life and trying to live on. That's what the Egyptians were trying to do. That's, you know, when we see these mummies reviving, that's sort of the metaphor there. And yeah, so it's
all about that immortality, right? Absolutely. We're always searching for it.
Yeah. And, you know, that, I mean, I guess that's common for a lot of monsters. You have that with vampires and Frankensteins and all the other things. Like, I mean, even, you know, werewolves have that in a lot of cases. But there's something specifically about mummies here where that's built into the idea. You know, that's people made mummies. They're not made up. You know, they're not a fictional thing like a vampire. And we did it because we wanted to be immortal.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we inscribe the spells on the insides of the tombs and things like that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I, you know, this is one of those ones that, like, if you've somehow missed it, I wouldn't be surprised because, you know, like we said, it kind of has flown under the radar, but it is definitely an unsung mummy movie that is absolutely worth checking out.
Absolutely. All right. Anything else we got to say about this?
I think that's it on this one.
All right, Anthony. Well, we've seen an old bag of bones. How about we check out a newer bag of bones, namely Bones starring Snoop Dogg and Pam Grier next week.
Yeah, this is another kind of deep cut. We like to do things that are sort of mummy adjacent from time to time. I think, you know, some people might try to say this isn't a mummy movie, but join us next week and we will make the argument for why it is absolutely a mummy movie.
Absolutely. All right. Well, anything else we got to say?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, that's a wrap.
Oh, man, you got me. Oh, yeah, I wondered what you would do with that. You got me. I was not expecting that, but that's the exact right answer.
You know what? I think to a point, we'll play it straight.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured. It's just like, this is just an episode of a podcast that you've been listening to for a while, and it's about mummies, and we all know that that's the thing we do all the time, every week.
Okay. I like it. Let's do it. You ready?
I am ready.
All right, in 3, 2, 1...